Hello, folks. I'm Endaiku the Wise, and with me today is...
Hey, guys. I'm Ryos, and this is the Shades of Gaming podcast, number one. And it's going to be mainly our complaints and grievances about video games in the market today and of old.
Oh, yeah.
So, starting us out, we're going to go over some of the battle systems that we kind of gripe at. I'll let Endaiku start this one, so go ahead.
Okay, the whole turn-based JRPG system. I understand its appeal to some people, but for me, when I play a game that says it's an RPG, I like to feel that I'm actually in control of the character, and the whole turn-based system doesn't really make me feel like I'm actually controlling that specific character. It makes me feel like I'm controlling everybody, which kind of, in a way, for me, negates the whole concept of role-playing game. Another thing is, like, certain games, you know, it's okay, though. Like, the Pokemon series, you're not controlling the monsters, you're controlling the trainer. You're not controlling the Pokemon, you're controlling the trainer. And, you know, games like Mother's Wreath, you know, spoilers! Not really, this isn't really a spoiler, but we'll have spoiler warnings for anything that we might spoil ending that you might not have played with. But the ending of Mother 3 was... It kind of comical with how they kind of explained you doing the turn-based system where they had it basically breaking the fourth wall. While the turn-based system and the games have great stories, I will admit that. A lot of the JRPGs have excellent stories. It's just that the turn-based system doesn't feel as involving as, say, a game like Secret of Mana would, or Legend of Zelda. And, you know, I'll probably get gripe from some people. I'll probably even get this from Ryos for saying this, but I do consider Legend of Zelda an RPG series.
Right, and any thoughts? And I would definitely consider Legend of Zelda a RPG series, but at the same time, it's all really dependent on what kind of RPG you're after. Because there's a major difference between the JRPGs and the typical RPGs, because in a sense, even Mass Effect is considered an RPG game. Even you can go over to Gears of War. A lot of the first-person shooter games can still be considered RPGs.
Yeah, and hell, my favorite game of all time is technically an RPG, Shenmue.
Right, now, my view on that is, I mean, yes, there are RPG games, but the battle system, really how that makes me feel involved with the game is, you know, typically you're playing a character that's like the leader, you know, like, say, Zidane Tribal from Final Fantasy IX. Now, Zidane is, give or take, within every single battle in the entire game. There is no, you can't, like, take him out of the party, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
So I get the idea of, hey, your character is telling other people, being like, oh yeah, let's do this, you know, kind of like that. If you kind of understand where I'm going with,
yeah,
where it's just, you know, it kind of still gives you that RPG element because you're controlling one single character, but at the same time, it's from another. I can't think of the word right now. Another culture, you know, they have different ideals than us. Now, for me, if you want like a battle system that really just brings you straight into the game, I mean, you look at the Elder Scrolls series, first person or third person, whichever one. I mean, that is an RPG series. I mean, that's like you are playing one character, the character you create, and you can do whatever you damn well please, pretty much. Which I thought it was definitely a great idea. Now, my problem is, now, what you like in a JRPG is actually the exact opposite of what I prefer. I prefer having, you know, a lineup. You know, I was always, you know, that's just how I, it's hard to, kind of hard to explain, you know. It's really the four character lineup and being able to strategize. That's what made a JRPG for me. Nowadays, you've got games like Final Fantasy 12 and 13 where it's really you're controlling one character and then the AI controls the rest of your team. And for 13, you only have two people. Now, there is the paradigm system where, you know, you swap everyone's paradigm, but it's really, it's just not enough for me. You know, it's just, it doesn't do it. You know, it doesn't have that old feel of Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, 6, 3, you know, all the really good ones. And these days, the only JRPG that stuck to the Final Fantasy-esque battle system, you know, the pre-12, the 10 and below, is Lost Odyssey on the Xbox 360, which I picked up very recently, and I haven't gotten too far into it. But it seems like a very good game, and I would recommend it to anybody. It's very underrated, though.
If I ever get a 360, I'll get it.
Next we have... Yeah, it's definitely worth a shot. Anyway, next we had sequels. Oh, God. My God. If I have to see another, I really don't know. If I have to see another freaking Mario Party game, I'm going to shit myself and then shoot myself in the face. Because you need one per console. It's all the same. It's really all the same. It's not going to be a game that you're going to be playing by yourself a lot. You know, it's going to be a party game. Yeah. That's what it really is.
I mean, with now, the Mario Kart series, like, they usually just do one per console.
Why can't we do that with the Mario Party? I mean, and even, I mean, there's a lot of games that are guilty of beating a dead horse. I mean, how many times do you have to remake the original Super Mario Brothers with a couple new things? New Super Mario Brothers, New Super Mario Brothers U. I mean, I worked at GameStop. I watched people take these games off the shelf, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's an awesome game. Why not just go on the WiiWare and get the original if you really want to play something that reminds you of the original?
Yeah.
Graphics.
I can see the appeal of the newer Mario games in some senses, but I can see where you're coming from too, because it is beating a dead horse. For me, the best example of beating a dead fucking horse is the X series, the Mega Man X series. See, Mega Man X was never supposed to be a Mega Man X series. Keiji Inafune wanted to make the Zero series first, but they, you know, the Capcom were like, hey, you know, I don't think our fans are going to be, like, into this, because it's not really Mega Man, so they had them create X. And when they did X1 to X5, and X5 for me is one of my top 10 favorite games I've ever played. That game was phenomenal, had, you know, great story, and, you know, it offered a way of closure for the series. Not...
Well, which one was that? Was that the...
You're really trying forget. To stop the planet from crashing. Or the...
Right.
Yeah.
The space station from crashing, right? Right, that is the one I'm thinking of. That was actually one of my personal favorite Mega Man games.
The several things I liked about that game, they introduced a really cool, cocky-ass villain in Dynamo, who is probably one of my favorite villains in that's the whole X series. But, you know, they offered us closure for the X series so Inafune could start Zero. He did end up starting the Zero series in around 2002 for the Game Boy Advance. But the problem is after X5, Capcom, being, you know, showing the signs that they were money-grubbing whores, decided, hey, you know what, we need to make another X game, and we're going to make it just, like, one year, or several months, like, almost a year after the X5 comes out. And they rushed, the development on it was so rushed, that I don't think they had anybody playtest the game, because the reason why X6 was so bad was because of how unnecessarily difficult it was. It had the nightmare system, it had some of the most annoying boss fights in Mega Man X.
Speaking of boss fights in Capcom, here's a personal gripe I have with Capcom. All the way from Devil May Cry to Mega Man to everything, pretty much everything Capcom has ever freaking released ever, all the way to Okami on the Wii. Boss rushes at the end. It's a very bad filler to anything. If you want to take a couple things and bring them back, I mean, Okami, you fought every boss except for, like, one of the main ones. And there was another boss, I forget the boss it was, but you had to fight it three times. before you fought the final boss. Mega Man is notorious for boss rushes at the end. You have to face, and typically in every Mega Man game, X or not, you have to face every Robot Master you've faced all the way up to this point. I've beat them once. Why do
you
I have to face them again?
Mega Man, especially X and Classic Series, it kind of became a, you know, it's kind of Capcom's own, you know, programming and deciding, you know, every game needs this. And, you know, if they take it out, it it's kind of become a part of the Mega Man games, especially those two series.
Right, but it didn't just stem from Mega Man games. Everything Capcom has had out on the market as of recently is guilty of this. Devil May Cry 3, you have to fight every boss that you fought right at the end of the game before you fight Virgil. It's just, really? Really? Why? Why is it necessary to fight all these bosses again? Especially when you go through the trouble to beat all of them the first time. What is the point? Now, as a secondary mode, such as in the Kirby games as a boss rush, or something, you know, that's fine. You know, oh, I want to see how fast I can beat the game. Or like a ROM hack version of Super Metroid. How fast can I beat all the bosses in a row? No, that's awesome. No, I like the idea of that. You know, I like the idea of, you know, challenging yourself. But, like, Beautiful Joe, another Capcom game, is guilty of the same thing. You know, it's just like, come on, Capcom. The only Capcom games with the Mega Man logo on it that did not have the very repetitive boss battles was the Mega Man Legends series, which I'm not going to get into on this one, with Mega Man Legends 3 being scrapped and the fact that it had nothing to do with the rest of barely anything to do with the rest of the series anyway.
Yeah.
But that's for another time. Anyway.
I think even the Battle Network series in their games, they had a boss rush at the end.
Somewhat, but with the Battle Network games, a lot of your main enemies were actually the navvies, some of the main characters in the game. So that's kind of understandable. You know, it's not always a bad thing, but when it's something like Okami, where it was, you know, you fight the same boss three times, nothing changes. You know, nothing changes about it. But, I mean...
Okay. Back to the X series in general. Okay, X6 was shitty for its own right. Overly difficult. Annoying bosses. Fucking... Yeah. Warning, there will be swearing in this podcast.
No, really, I would have never guessed.
Fuck Infinity Minjinion. That is the most annoying boss ever. More annoying than Bright Man. More annoying than Quick Man. More annoying than Slash Man, Burner Man. Any of the bosses from any of the series. It's just the fact that he keeps on multiplying himself and just sends these annoying attacks. It's like, if you want to do a boss fight like that perfect, you have to use charge shots. Which kind of makes you feel bad, because, you know, a lot of people want to challenge themselves and, you know, hey, I can beat this boss without taking damage with no charge shots. This boss, no, not going to happen.
Unless you're, like, God
and
Mega Man. Anyway, for our next topic
then you go from X6 to X7. X7 was shitty for several reasons. 3D. Mega Man should never be in 3D, unless it's Legends. Legends has, you know, it works in 3.
Legends pulled it off properly.
Mega Man 7 had shitty 3D levels, shitty bosses. Fucking Tornado Tunyon. Why? And the voice acting was just horrendous in that game.
We'll continue on that subject at another time. But another thing I have to say about sequels, and this is going to be a huge spoiler warning, is the lack of closure in several of these games. I think that... let's give you an example. I'm going to spoil the ending of Final Fantasy IX here. One of my absolute favorite games of all time, regardless of era or anything. The ending to this game, you think that Zidane is dead. You think that he stayed behind and everything else. No one knows where he is. Garnet is sad about it. Garnet Dagger, whatever you decide to name her, is sad about that. But at the same play that the beginning of the game took part in, he reveals himself at the beginning, and she jumps down to the stage and meets with him, and, you know, that's where it ends. You know, it gives some closure. It's, you know, this happy ending type of thing. Now, I'm a huge Mass Effect fan. Absolutely gigantic Mass Effect fan. Now, my problem is, you know, I can deal with Shepard either dying or whatever. I want to know what the fuck happened after they landed on the other planet. That's the ending that I got. I know that there are several endings, and there's director's cut, and hell, there's even a mod for a happy ending. The main thing about the Mass Effect series that really encompassed me and got me really into the game was how emotionally drawing the game is. You get every decision you make, there's characters that have personalities. You know, you're not just run and shoot, run and shoot, run and shoot, run and shoot. You know, you have downtime between every mission where you get to talk to these people, see their view on everything. And hell, how Mass Effect 3 did it was amazing. Absolutely amazing. They incorporated the iPad, iPhone, Android devices into it with the Mass Effect 3 datapad. Now, what the datapad did, which I'm actually going to it right now, is not only was it a development to get your galactic readiness up without having to play the multiplayer, which we'll cover in a little bit. Now, what it did was not only could you go and talk to the people after a mission, but if you have the datapad app linked to your Origin account, the characters actually sent you messages to your phone, like through the, not through text message or anything, but through the datapad. And you actually learn quite a bit through that. It's very, very cool how they did that. And, I mean, just having the ability to, you know, start a relationship with one of the characters, you know, I always picked Tali Zora, one of the Quarians. And during Mass Effect 3, you wind up saving their planet, and God forbid you didn't know, she can wind up killing herself because the Quarians go extinct, which threw me for a loop the first time I played the game. I played through the second and third game again to have her survive. Because, you know, it's one of those games where you really get to know the characters. I mean, between Garrus, Leora, all the characters in the Mass Effect series were phenomenally scripted. Absolutely phenomenal. Now, my gripe with it is that during the ending, if you get the proper ending with the destroy ending, you see Shepard, you see, well, his body armor take a breath, and it cuts. And now I could deal with this. You know, I could deal with, oh, wow, that's really awesome. I can't wait for the next game. They've already decided that Mass Effect 4, which they don't want people calling it Mass Effect 4 because it has nothing to do with Mass Effect 3. Everything is canon, but it has nothing to do with the ending. It is no longer a sequel. Give us a proper ending. Like, I don't even care if they meet or whatever. You know, I'm about halfway through the game on my third playthrough. I have played 20 hours worth of Mass Effect 3 this week, just playing through it again. That kind of time, you want to see something go from it. You know, you want to see the characters happy. And it's like, maybe I get a little bit too into it, but you know what? I have that right. You know, I've always been like that. You know, I really enjoyed Garnet from Final Fantasy IX. Her personality and everything, and how she always wanted to protect everybody and make everybody happy, and how she felt pressured into everything. You know, it's just like reading a book, and that's the best thing I can compare to. You know, how many people have fallen in love with a book, and you know, you fall in love with a character from a book, and you know, you get it, yeah, you know, maybe a little bit obsessed with it, and you want to see what happens next. Not so much. I'm talking more along the lines of like the Harry Potter books, where like, you know, you really learn about them. You know, I've never read the Twilight books, and you know, I've never cared to. You know, I actually started reading the first one back in high school, and I was like, this is an interesting.
I read through them, and I just kind of found how funny and ridiculous the bad writing was.
God. If you want a good series, I think that you would enjoy this. Was anything by Darren Shan, his Demonata series and his Cirque du Freak series. The Cirque du Freak series did this too. You get really close with one of the characters, and they winds up dying, and you get those same feelings of wow, you felt connected to that character. So why have an ending like that? And Mass Effect isn't the only one guilty of this. There are plenty of other games. I don't have any to really pull to. Because Mass Effect is like fresh in my mind right now, but I mean,
this game ending doesn't really give closure, because it's not the fact that it ended this way.
not the game itself. Which brings to the next subject of, you start a series, finish the series. So that's where it comes down to. And I your favorite series is the Shenmue series,
and,
correct?
You know, I just recently watched a Let's Play of Shenmue 2, and I really want to get an Xbox and get the game, and I've been playing it on an emulator. It's not as reliable on emulator though, but Shenmue 2's ending basically leads the door open wide, like it's fucking blasted open with C4 wide for a sequel, because Yu Suzuki had the series all planned out from start to finish. When he first started the series, it was gonna take at least 4 games to finish, and then after Shenmue 2, after Sega collapses and becomes just a software developer, for some reason Sega decides, we know you want to finish the series, but we kind of have other priorities, like making another Sonic game, because you know how great Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2 were, and Sonic Heroes isn't that bad. We're going to make another Sonic game. We're going to call it Sonic Next Gen, and it's going to be a complete fucking shithole of a game.
Actually, that was not Sonic Next Gen. That was Sonic Generations. And actually, I kind of like that game because it took the best out of all of the Sonic games.
I meant Sonic 06. Now, because this was back when Sonic 06 was coming out.
Oh, God.
Sonic Generations looks beautiful.
Right.
And I also hear Sonic Colors was a great game, too.
I never played Colors, but my personal favorite Sonic game would have to be Sonic Adventure 2 Battle. That or the director's cut of Sonic Adventure. They were very well done games that I would like to see more along that line of reasoning, but I think that Sonic has been a little bit overdone, just like Mario has been a little bit overdone. We need something new, kind of like when Super Mario Sunshine came out. It was completely different, and much like when Sonic Super Mario Galaxy came out, it was completely different. I would like to not see any more of the side-scrolling Mario games, or more, even more. I hate the cameo appearances of Mario, such as Mario Tennis and all of these. I mean, just make one and be done with it.
One series that when the most recent games came out for it, it was a breath of fresh air. While it was still kind of the same concept for one of the games, it was relieving because it hadn't been released for a while. One of the games was different, and that's Kirby's Epic Yarn, which was made by another company. And that game was good for its own right, even though it's, impossible to die.
Yeah, I can agree that. I would love to see more Kirby
Return
games.
To Dream Land,
Kirby is one
great.
Unsung.
Apparently, the company who was behind Epic Yarn, instead of doing... they're not just doing Kirby. The next Epic Yarn game is actually going to be Yoshi's Epic Yarn.
I think that'd be interesting. I'd like more of the side characters that Nintendo's kind of pushed off to the side. Anyway, our next subject is kind of controversial because a lot of people are going to hate us for it. But multiplayer, the building of multiplayer over the building of the single player. Now, there's three main things here. There's the overabundance of the multiplayer, focusing solely on the multiplayer. There's the overly focusing on the single player. And then there's a happy median. Now, going back to Mass Effect was very good about it. They had a multiplayer. They didn't focus on the multiplayer. They focused on their story. But even coming from a Mass Effect fanboy, fuck you, Origin, and fuck you, BioWare, for making us play the multiplayer to get a better ending. That's just, it's blatant. Do not do that. That's a bad idea. Do not force the multiplayer onto anybody. I honestly, I don't like the multiplayer that much. You know, I'm a first person shooter guy. You know, I'm that guy who's got that big rig computer, and I'm going to be shooting the crap at anybody. No, Counter Strike, motherfucker. Damn straight. Fuck Team Fortress. That's another one where it's blown up to a proportion that it's becoming a pay to win game. Yeah. And I hate that. Counter Strike, Counter Strike Global Offensive. Keep it simple. Give us our dedicated servers. Fuck you, Treyarch. Fuck you, Activision. Give us fucking dedicated servers. Anyway, going from there...
Oh, I forgot you were playing Counter-Strike, too.
This brings up bad blood. No, yeah, I love Counter-Strike. But let's bring up the most controversial of our four games here, Call of Duty. Now, Call of Duty started out as basically a World War II simulator. Nowadays, it's... Check out that fucking multiplayer. That's awesome. Look how many the things you can do on the multiplayer. I, for one, haven't touched the single player in Black Ops 2. Didn't touch it in Modern Warfare 3 either. Black Ops, I loved the single player. And I loved the multiplayer. Black Ops, the original Black Ops, was possibly the best Call of Duty, in my opinion. Now, nowadays, Treyarch, Activision, whoever owns it at the time, whoever's taking their turn up at bat,
okay,
come on. Is it really all about, it's, again, with the beating the dead horse, and it's just,
from what I understand about the Modern Warfare series itself, the story is actually pretty good, because it's a, you know, it doesn't, you know, go to something different in each game, it's a continuation, there's a story that goes from game to game, which is good, instead of, like, some games where it's like, we have a story for this game, next game, it's, you know, something, something, too. And it's a completely fucking different story.
Black Ops 2 did have a continuation story. But really, the main marketing for these games is the multiplayer. And I'm sure we're going to get some hate mail for this one. But I can only imagine. No, I don't even want to. But going on from that, I feel that Call of Duty as a series has... gone so far from its roots, along with Battlefield as well. Battlefield has a good story to it, but I think I really, you know, I can't really say it's the developer's fault for that. It's really society's fault for that one, where it's, you know, people want the multiplayer more than they want the single player. They can't appreciate the story as they used to. I will give them that one, but I will say this is. Give the PC players back their dedicated servers. I mean, we can handle our cheaters.
A balance. You need balance to make things really great.
Yeah, and speaking of balance, I think the perfect first-person shooter to represent a good balance between story and multiplayer is the Halo series on the Xbox 360. Between Halo 1 through 3, I did not beat 3. That, or if I did, I really just don't remember it. I didn't have an Xbox for about 2 years after buying it and then selling it and then buying it again. But Halo Reach told an amazing story. Even Halo 4 tells an amazing story. It's just...
Oh yeah!
Phenomenal. I'm very happy with what I think. What is it? I forget the name of the studio that did it, but they did a phenomenal job with Halo 4. Not only did they give it a good story, they gave it a very good multiplayer, and it's very balanced and not one-sided. The problem with the Call of Duty multiplayer is, in fact, its leveling system. The more you level, the more weapons you have access to. It's just some weapons are better than other. You know, you come into it late. I haven't been playing. I was 15. I was ranked 15 in Black Ops 2, but I was like a 10th prestige in the original Black Ops.
Topic, and this is kind of a topic that we don't really have on our list. We'll get into the next topic after this quick topic that I'm going to introduce. And then this is basically the random topic of the night, I guess. Vaporware games. You know what? Vaporware games is basically a game that's been gets hyped up, and then it falls off the face of the earth. Examples of that would be the Lost Guardian, Duke Nukem Forever for a while was a vaporware game. And one of your favorite series, Half-Life 3.
And Half-Life 3 still hasn't fallen off the plane of existence yet. I really honestly think that they're going to do something great with that. Personally, I hope they do. I don't see them abandoning a series that's that good. I think that they're actually holding it and waiting for Valve to start faltering. And then they release that, and it's like, oh, look, Valve is on top again. I thought you were going to mention the Mega Man Legends 3. You know, it's just, it was supposed to be there, it was hyped up, and then it never existed. You know, they didn't feel that.
Another Mega Man game that was supposed to be released was called Mega Man Universe, which was supposed to be an online MMO Mega Man game.
Oh, going back to our multiplayer over single player, or vice versa, I forgot to mention the Elder Scrolls series. Now, unlike, say, Call of Duty, which is doomed to focus on its multiplayer, Skyrim and Oblivion, Morrowind, all the Elder Scrolls series, I apologize, very focused on the single player, which, you know, some people were very annoyed at, that there's never been any multiplayer. But Bethesda's response to that was they're now releasing an entire MMO based on the Elder Scrolls world, which I'm very interested to see how that goes. I mean, if it's the same type of combat system as Skyrim and Morrowind and Oblivion used, I would play it in a heartbeat. I'd pay whatever price to pay that, because that would be very interesting, because then it's not about who has the better gear. I mean, you look at like World of Warcraft, and it would just blow it out of the water.
You know,
for some.
One game
for some.
That I noticed that Bethesda gets a lot of rewards for games every year. One game that a lot of people were surprised didn't get Game of the Year this past year was Dishonored, which I've seen gameplay of it, and I really want to get that game because that game looks amazing.
Right, I actually had that at some point. I started playing it, but due to technical issues, I couldn't play it. I was very interested in it. I don't think it was Game of the Year material, because from what I've heard, it was very linear, and it was a very short game.
I think Game of the Year awards went to the Walking Dead video game series.
Even as a ex-GameStop employee, I never really got into that. I had the opportunity, and it's just, I'm not into the series at all. I didn't watch the video game awards this year. Elected to, but that basically covers everything for today.
Didn't we have another topic? Rush development.
Oh god. All I can say, the biggest, and when I say biggest, I mean biggest. World of Warcraft is very rushed development. Now, Blizzard, on the other hand, I treat World of Warcraft and Blizzard as two separate entities. Now, there's a difference between rush development and Blizzard's famous mantra of when it's done, which I love. Now, are some people disappointed with what they've come out with Diablo 2 being one of the games that people can still consider the best PC game of all time? And the vastly inferior, in my eyes, and apparently quite a few people's eyes, Diablo 3. They feel that it was... Blizzard got their hand too far into Diablo 3, introducing an auction house with a paid money auction house. Error now, 37. If you look at it, I waited...
Error 37?
I'm sorry? Oh god, don't get me on that. But it was more... That was the login failure. Which... brings me to the auction houses in Diablo 3 being cash money auction houses. I think that Blizzard was really just trying to cash in on one of their bigger franchises. But at the same time, 8 years after the initial release, StarCraft II came out, and it was a phenomenal game. I've been a huge fan of Blizzard games, and I had played World of Warcraft for the longest time ever. But I can't find myself playing it again because of the rush development of the expansion packs, because players are just reaching the end game content way too fast.
Oh, God.
You know?
For me, the two biggest culprits of rush development, and both, one essence, it was kind of the fans' fault, and one essence, it was the developers' fault for rushing it. The one where it's the fans' fault, kind of, is Sonic 06. Sonic 06 was not supposed to release in 2006. It was supposed to release in 2007 for Sonic's 15th or 20th anniversary, I believe. No,
20th anniversary. It's got to be 20th. No, wait, no, it might be. I forget how old I was when Sonic came out, but I had had the first one. Definitely wasn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was probably 15th. Sorry, well, continue.
The problem is that the fans got, you know, after seeing trailers for the game, got so excited and so impatient that they wanted this game to come out, you know, as soon as possible. You know, Sega wanted to hold off, and, you know, but the fans were just like, no, we need this game now. And that basically led to them not testing the levels, you know, not revising this, getting a chance to revise anything they want to change in the story. So you got a game that's filled with a shitty story, great music, shitty story, and riddled with so many fucking glitches, it's not even funny. Whereas you take another game, which was Silent Hill 4 The Room, which originally wasn't supposed to be a Silent Hill game. That was supposed to be its own separate thing. But, yeah, it was
it real? I wasn't aware of that. I've been meaning to play through that game.
But the problem with Silent Hill 4 The Room was the fact that halfway through almost three-quarters of the way through development, the original development team got fired, and it got handed off to Team Silent. And Team Silent did not get any extra time to work with the game. They had, like, a rush schedule. So, basically, they couldn't change much. They just had to slap some Silent Hill references into the game. And it results in a game that has a okay story, but it also has some of the worst, like, gameplay mechanics in the Silent Hill series. But
all I can say is fucking rabbit scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say on that one.
But, you know, the one thing that did go right, that a lot of people do kind of like with Silent Hill 4, is the charge attack with the melee weapons, because, you know, it kind of let you do powerful attacks. And, you know, Silent Hill games, you know, it's rare that you're going to use a gun. It's very rare. In Silent Hill 4 The Room, you basically have, like, one gun, and you gotta save it for a special occasion.
I find it to be the exact opposite. I find in Silent Hill 2 and Homecoming, you wind up using guns a lot more than anything else. But on a second note of Rush development, which is a little bit different than internal affairs, from what I remember, Mass Effect 3 was a very rushed, because the game was actually leaked, and they had to rush the ending. Was one of the theories is why the ending is so sporadic. Going off of that, something that I didn't really write down as a topic, but it's kind of a major complaint for me, is DLC. Downloadable content is becoming and has been becoming a very big problem. If you're not done with a game, don't release it. It's becoming a cash cow. I can't keep spending money on multiplayer map packs. I play Forza Horizon. I can't keep spending money on car packs just to get the latest cars. I mean, even if I don't want to buy them, if I don't have the car pack, I can't see the car if someone else is playing it. You know, it's just, either give everyone the content, the actual content itself, and limit the access, or give it away for free. I mean, you're making, it's just milking more out of the game than is completely necessary. It's very annoying to buy a game and then spend another $60 on maps. It's just like, I can understand keeping the game alive, but if you want to keep the game alive, just give us some free
DLC. You know, the one rant I'll say about DLC is Capcom's on-disc DLC. You got stuff on the disc that you have to fucking pay for. That is bullshit. That's all I'm going to say about that. But,
yeah. And a good way of doing the DLC. I mean, even if I could open up my Origin right now, and in Origin with their Mass Effect series, which again I'm delving back into Mass Effect, which, you know, of course my Origin has this giant update to do. I don't know why, but I got, when I had bought Mass Effect, and I was disappointed by the ending, obviously, but there was a fair amount of free downloadable content. The From Ashes DLC and the Director's Cut DLC was given away for free. I mean, and now two DLCs that have come out recently, which is the Leviathan DLC and the Omega DLC, I haven't touched simply because I would have to pay for them. I'm not a fan of that. And Elder Scrolls even is guilty of the same thing. But at the same time, I can see why the Elder Scrolls series requires you to pay for the DLC. Because most of the time, it's a damn near expansion to the game. Oblivion and
Dragon Age
Shudder,
Origins Shivering Awakening Isles. Expansion 2 for...
Yes. Yes, it is. Dragon Age Origins Awakening is a expansion pack. But I think the best opinion on DLC was the Shivering Isles, which was a full expansion, brand new story for Elder Scrolls Oblivion. That was good, and I hope to see something from Bethesda along the same lines with Skyrim. I haven't tried the Skyrim DLC yet. When I get my hands on it, I'll be doing that. So, that kind of covers damn near everything that we were going to talk about today. So, I'll say this. I'll apologize for my Mass Effect fanboying today, but at least I'm not praising everything about the game. But,
and I'm Ryos.
And this has been the Shades of Gaming podcast number 1, and I hope that you guys will join us next time.